Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's about 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, November the 23rd. And it's time for our Thanksgiving week edition of The Week in Review. We are thankful to have two great guests with us today to talk with you about the news of the week. You can join in with an observation from the news this week by calling 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And please include your first name and community with your email. We have with us today on the telephone Jo Egelhoff. She is editor of foxpolitics.net. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. And joining us in studio is Ed Garvey, senior partner at the law firm of Garvey McNeil and McGilvery and editor and publisher of FightingBob.com. Good morning to you.
Good morning to both of you.
And I don't think that you've been paired together before in the Week in Review. So, Joe, you are the editor of FoxPolitics.net, and you come from, would you say, a right-of-center point of view?
I would. I definitely write a center. And actually, Ed and I did pair up, what was that, a couple of months ago, Ed. I had the pleasure of having Ed on the show when I subbed for Jerry Bader show.
Right.
Yeah, okay. And we actually agreed on several issues, as I recall.
That means you were right on many, many things.
Well, we'll see if we can change that today. No, in fact, I was going to start with some state issues today, and I'm going to do something a little bit different. I'm going to start with a caller who will bring up our first topic, and that's Laverne in Monroe. Hi, Laverne, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joy.
Morning.
Great program.
Well, so far you've been the first guest, so there we go.
And Capital Times and the Wednesday's paper, they talk about Annette Ziegler's conflict. Mm. I'd like to have you compare that with Barry Bonds.
Well, I don't know if you have to compare it with Barry Bonds, but let's talk about Supreme Court Justice Annette Ziegler and her time before this panel, and whether or not she's going to stay on the Supreme Court or not. What do you think, Ed?
Well, it's a tough one for lawyers, obviously, because probably she will remain on the Supreme Court, and so you have to be a little bit concerned about what you say. But the fact is that I guess I was surprised that she didn't testify at the three-judge hearing. It was a 90-minute hearing. Mike McCabe was there for the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, and he was very disappointed in the questions that were asked. It would seem that from the comments that were made, if you judge from that, there will be some kind of a reprimand recommendation to the court. It places the Supreme Court in a very difficult spot because they're judging one of their colleagues. It's never been done before in this state that I know of, and so it'll be interesting to say the least, and I'm sure that everyone is looking at it because it all leads back to that great question, when are we going to have publicly financed campaigns for the Supreme Court so we don't have many of the same issues coming up year after year?
Mm-hmm. Joe?
Well, first of all, Ed was recently involved in a case before Justice Ziegler, and I think perhaps he should recuse himself from this discussion. What do you think, Ed?
Well, we have a gotcha journalist in Milwaukee who said that because my wife and I gave $250 to Justice Butler, that somehow he should recuse himself. And you know, it's pretty silly. We're not parties in that case. But this case has been going on for 5 years, so there wasn't any connection. But I do appreciate you raising the issue.
Well, and that,
thanks
and that
a
raises,
lot.
That raises the issue of disclosure. Certainly the Cap Times and Mike McCabe were very tough on Justice Ziegler. And it was refreshing to see the comment by, who was it, Ralph Adam Fine, who said that this was just a blip on the screen or something. And one of the hardly a blip on the screen, and a cup of hemlock certainly shouldn't be the remedy, or something like that.
Right.
And maybe we need a slap on the hand here. But for heaven's sakes, again, one of the lobbyists for the realtors, he says you can find some sort of random conflict of interest anywhere you look, and pretty soon it paralyzes the court. So let's move forward. I think Justice Ziegler is doing has done something innovative in disclosing her political contributions and where that may be a problem. And you've run into that, Ed. Is that helpful? It seems like Justice Butler is thinking about doing the same thing.
Well, I think they all should, but I think they should follow Chief Justice Shirley Abrahamson, who testified before the legislature in favor of publicly financed campaigns. I mean, it doesn't do any of us any good when you look and see, let's say, one of the big law firms gives thousands of dollars to a candidate, and someone who's representing an indigent client can't afford any of that. So we really need to start with public financing of all campaigns, and I think if we started with a court, everyone would have more confidence in the system.
Do you think that the court is the one place, perhaps, where conflict of interest will be least a problem? These are highly highly trustworthy individuals.
Well, in a system where you're electing people and you have Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce announcing that they're going to raise up to $4 million to defeat Justice Butler, that does raise lots of questions about whether the quality of the candidate has anything to do with it. It's really the money, and that's also true if you're talking about the U.S. Senate or governor or the leading candidates for president in both the Republican and the Democratic side of things. I mean, money is now the dominant factor. And for those of us who don't have a lot of it, we're simply irrelevant in this process.
Yeah. Mm. Let me update. This judicial panel, I believe, did recommend a reprimand and not something as severe as removal of her from the Supreme Court. But it is the state Supreme Court which makes the final
right.
determination
mm-hmm.
on what happens to her.
And no hemlock has been ordered. We checked with the Food and Drug Administration.
But and Ziegler has admitted to breaking the ethics code by hearing cases involving a bank in West Bend where her husband was sitting on the board of directors. So anyway, the panel did recommend a reprimand, but the full Supreme Court will make the final decision. Let's also talk about, since we talked a little bit about campaign finance reform, this week, the Tom Nelson, a Democrat from Kaukauna, who was the guy who was sitting in the assembly chambers waiting for the budget to be completed, along with a colleague, have come out with some proposals to make sure that doesn't happen again. One of them includes no fundraising during budget time for state lawmakers. Does that make sense, Joe Egelhoff?
I think that makes sense, but I think that Tom Nelson, who's a good guy, I would call him a friend. Gordon Hintz, I don't know, but if he's anything like his dad, he's a real bright guy. These guys are talking about the wrong. I mean, you don't sit and take cold showers in the basement of the legislature when the budget process itself is based on completely erroneous assumptions. In other words, we need to get to gap accounting for a budget. And let's fix the accounting process. Let's fix what really needs to be fixed. Wisconsin, one of only two states or something that don't use gap accounting for the budget process. So Tom Nelson needs to concentrate on how the budget needs to be put together in the first place, rather than sitting in the legislature.
Well, the problem that we had was that the budget was, 100 and some days
mm-hmm.
off. And school districts and just about everybody depends on some certainty. It was just almost a farce to watch this thing happen, and it showed a lack of leadership. But I think, you know, there's something that's going on in the state that is rather troubling. Right after the budget is approved, the Secretary of the Department of Transportation announces that the Doyle administration is proposing a $1.9 billion resurfacing and expansion of I-94 between Mitchell Airport and the Illinois border. Now, we're talking $54 million a mile. When we have problems with education, we can't fund special education. We, you know, are still, you know, arguing about all sorts of other needs that are not being met. It seems to me that the Department of Transportation has a free ticket they can do almost anything they want in the legislature because of the amount of money that the highway lobby pours into these campaigns. Everything gets skewed because of the tremendous amount of money going into highways as opposed to higher education, tuition, and that sort of thing.
Ed, there's plenty of money. There's tons of money going into education. I agree with you. We can't continue to fool with this transportation account like we are. It certainly has plenty of dollars to keep the state current on its infrastructure, which is critical. And I don't know about the wisdom of the $1.9 billion, especially as compared with mass transit dollars. But for heaven's sakes, let's start with a budget that has integrity so that we can do analyses based on one set of numbers. And it's a real problem in the state of Wisconsin and has brought us to a level of the lowest bond rating in the nation. We've got to do something.
We could start with public financing. I mean, one of the questions was, what about raising money during the budget cycle? I mean, you know, that suggests that, a lobbyist wakes up one morning and says, oh, my goodness, there's a bill pending in the mm-hmm. legislature on the budget. Maybe I should go give some money to someone. In reality, the lobbyists, and there are now hundreds of them, know exactly what they want. The timing is less important than what they're willing to do to get their way. So I think if we, again, had public financing and a totally open budgetary process, things would change.
Yeah. We will be talking with Jay Heck from Common Cause on Monday between 7 and 8 during the state capitol report about Common Cause wanting the governor to call a special session and right. The chances for any campaign finance reform in any time in the near future. So more on that coming up in the state capitol report after 7 o'clock on Monday. We are reviewing the news of the week with Joe Egelhoff, editor of foxpolitics.net, and Ed Garvey, editor and publisher of fightingbob.com. And we welcome your subjects from the news this week at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up this afternoon, John Munson in for Ben Marins between 4 and 6 for At Issue. And after 4, you can call in and talk with John and his guest about your views on the news, talking about the top news stories of the week during Your Views on the News every Friday after 4. Every Friday after 8, we welcome in two guests with different perspectives to talk with you about the news of the week. We review the top political stories of every week during this hour, and we welcome your participation at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison 263-1890. Former White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan's book isn't due out until April, but it's already raising eyebrows. According to an excerpt, McClellan blames President Bush and Vice President Cheney for efforts to mislead the public about the role of White House aides in leaking the identity of CIA operative Valerie Plame. She's married to former Ambassador Joe Wilson, who was a critic of pre-Iraq war intelligence. McClellan charges that he was allowed to unknowingly pass false information along when he told reporters that aides Carl Rove and Louis Libby were not involved in the leak. An email this morning from Karen in Platteville wonders if you will react to this story and wonder what you foresee happening, if anything, based on this revelation. Let's start with you, Ed Garvey. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I've been so wrong about Scott McClellan. I always thought he intentionally was lying, but
he was unknowingly lying.
Yes, that's right. He didn't know. You really wonder how much investigation he did to find out whether the president and the vice president knew. How did he suddenly find out? I mean, what's changed between now and the time he was in the White House? I think that this administration has really achieved a new low in terms of credibility. There's a reason why they're down around 28% approval rating and why most people think the country is going in the wrong direction. You can't believe them. I mean, if we talk about what's going on in Pakistan, here we have Pervez Musharraf, and Bush says, well, he really is somebody who believes in democracy. I mean, he has declared martial law, taken over everything, imprisoned people who are his opponents. So, I mean, if you just take the statement that he believes in democracy and you look at the reality, you say, what can we believe that comes out of this administration?
Mm-hmm. Joe?
Well, number one, Scott McClellan is selling a book. Number two, why are we still talking about leaking the identity of a CIA operative whose identity wasn't classified anyway? Number three, Scott McClellan is selling a book. So I think that it's great that he's selling a book, and it's great that he left the White House and wrote a book and now is selling a book. Let's just let him sell his book. You notice that he didn't respond to inquiries for interviews to respond to the pre-press publicity. And I think we best not all get upset about pre-press publicity.
Should we buy the book?
No, don't buy the book. Wait until additional reviews come forward. How's
right,
that?
That makes sense.
Yeah, Valerie Plame was outraged that this happened, but also was mad that he wouldn't do interviews. I don't know if we know this. Karen in Platteville also wondered, why did the newspapers bury this report, and why was this released so far in advance of the book publication? It's my understanding that the book publisher released just a couple of paragraphs.
Yeah, it must have been coordinated with McClellan, however, since he knew enough not to give interviews and ruin the sale of the books. It just seems a little strange that it's released this early. But who knows? The book publishing industry is something beyond my scope of knowledge.
Yeah, number one, McClellan is selling a book.
Yeah, no, but so what do you foresee happening, Joe? Anything at all with this revelation besides book sales?
No, I don't. The question to ask is the one that Ed asked. All of a sudden, he unknowingly passed on information, so all of a sudden he's learned that this is false information, and then the founder and editor-in-chief of the publisher clarifies that McClellan doesn't suggest that Bush deliberately lied. I mean, more and more circles. So, McClellan is selling a book.
Joe, would you agree with Dennis Kucinich and myself this should lead to impeachment?
Lead to impeachment. No.
Oh, okay.
We don't agree on that, Ed.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Then I'm going to buy the book.
let's take another caller on another subject. Jim in Salt Lake City, listening on the web. Good morning.
Hi. Hey, thanks so much. I'm calling about an article that Michael Duffy wrote in this week's issue of Time Magazine on Mayor Giuliani. The two things that struck me about the article is two things about his former police chief. One, they compared his style to President Bush, that loyalty means more than doing a good job. So he was helping him become police chief, even though he might have known all these kickbacks were going on. And then the other thing is, I guess Carrick said the police chief, after he accepted the assignment, he was in this dark room with Mayor Giuliani. And after he said yes, these figures came out of the dark and kissed him on the cheek like he was welcomed into the mob. Yeah. And I was just wondering if you read that and what your views are.
Anybody, Ed, did you read that? What are your views?
Well, I think this whole story with Carrick and his relationship with Giuliani should probably end up disqualifying Giuliani for the presidency. He was pushing him for the Secretary of Homeland Security, despite the fact he'd been warned that he might be working for a corporation that was mobbed up. And, you know, he was his business partner. He was having an affair with Judith Reagan. They had this little love nest, which was supposed to be used for exhausted firefighters. The whole thing just is incredibly, startling, I guess, that really Giuliani is leading the pack on the Republican side of the ticket.
Yeah, I think that the Carrick business is troubling. But what's the proof of the pudding? The proof of the pudding came out in news this morning from the New York Times that the murder rate in New York is on track to be under 500 this year, when in 1990 it was 2,568 or something like that. And this is lower than it was in 1963. And this is just amazing. Now, was that Carrick? Was that it? Certainly started with Giuliani and his community policing, and Carrick and Giuliani's sticking to accountability. Now, this Carrick business, Ed, I'm with you. I'm suspicious about what it says about Giuliani, and I'm not about to choose a presidential candidate at the time, at the moment. But I'll tell you one thing I'm troubled by is this poll that also occurred last week that says that polled what how people would vote as far as likability.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I mean, that's just outrageous.
Yeah. I have decided not to endorse Giuliani. I think it probably wouldn't help.
You know, Giuliani might be ahead in national polls, but he's not ahead in Iowa. No. The first vote of the campaign in January, officially now January 3rd. What do you make of on that Republican ticket in Iowa, in particular, Mike Huckabee roaring to mm-hmm. a very good second place? Joe, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think Giuliani and John McCain had good reasons to essentially opt out of Iowa. They're not dumb. They're not politically dumb. And Huckabee fits the Iowa Republican electorate. Well, what he wants to seem like fits the Iowa electorate very well. So it's not surprising that Giuliani's not there, and it's not surprising that Huckabee and Romney are at the top in a conservative and I would say religiously conservative state as well.
You don't think it's the Chuck Norris endorsement, Ed?
I just. Iowa's going to be interesting. I think it could be the end of Hillary Clinton's campaign, and it could be the end of Giuliani's.
Iowa
and New Hampshire. She's not doing well in the polls all of a sudden. And I think she's in a position where she has to win the early primaries.
Yeah, that Barack Obama, still within the margin of error, but right. Is ahead of 30% to 26%. Why do you think Barack Obama's coming on strong right now?
I think these most recent debates, he's found his footing. I think he's been more thoughtful. Hillary Clinton tends to be, lecturing rather than discussing. And, I just think that maybe people are looking for a fresh idea and a fresh face to enter the political scene. Kind of reminds me when JFK was running in 1960, there was this sense that we had had a safe time, but a very quiet time under Eisenhower, and people were looking for some new leadership and some new ideas and a new direction, and he was the right person for that moment. And I think Barack or John Edwards may be the right person for this moment.
Hmm. What do you think, Joe?
I think that the John Edwards and Barack Obama have taken the gloves off a bit, and these are the results that we're seeing. I wonder what Ed feels about the background of Barack Obama that gets brought up regularly. It's not a stunning legislative background, and there's also acknowledged drug use. Any problems with that, Ed?
No, I mean, most of the experience in Washington is bad experience. I always look at it and I think I'd rather have a governor or someone outside of Washington, D.C., quite honestly, running for president. We eliminate too many good people by simply saying, well, if you don't have 20 years in the U.S. Senate, you're not qualified to run for president. I would think that for the most part, if you look at the votes of U.S. senators, there's a good reason to be able to defeat any one of them, I mean, because of votes that they have to take.
Do we disqualify too many because they have admitted drug use?
Well, what? He smoked some marijuana or something.
He did a little cocaine, too.
Yeah.
He admitted this in his book.
Was he with President Bush at the time?
Yeah, it's good.
No. What is interesting, some people are wondering, Brock's getting a little bit of flack in that he is admitting his drug use in front of high school students in Iowa, I think, and whether that was appropriate for him to talk about how he was a screw-up and now he's a good guy. Anything inappropriate about that, Joe?
Boy, I've seen it come back to bite when that discussion is had with high schoolers. So I don't see it. I see it as perhaps using them as a way to work this into his campaign. I don't know. I'm not a child psychologist, but I've seen it have a negative reaction.
Well, maybe just the honesty is something that appeals to young people as well. I mean, one of the problems we have is that young people are not interested in politics because they think there's so many hypocrites. And there's a reason why the Daily Show is where most people get their political news, because it's entertainment, because nobody sitting around here worrying about the differences between the candidates if you're under 25.
You know, there was some speculation that Barack Obama brought up this his past drug use, maybe as a preemptive strike.
To get it over with.
Yeah.
Yeah, bring it out early.
And also let me just ask you about what you make of Robert Novak and his column saying that somebody close to the Hillary Clinton campaign was telling everybody, him, that the Clinton campaign had good dirt on Obama and was, you know, it was a bombshell.
I've spent a lot of time defending freedom of the press, but I think I'd suppress Novak. I mean, anything he says, I would take a second look at. I mean, he's the one who leaked the information about Valerie Plame and Joe Wilson and so on, and still running around loose.
And then Obama was able to, maybe make some points by saying, this smear politics has no place in this campaign, and that probably Joe didn't help Hillary Clinton either.
Absolutely. Ed doesn't want to put any credence to Robert Novak, I don't put anything past the Hillary Clinton campaign.
Well, I'm not going to get into that one.
Yeah, well, so we have, and you also think in New Hampshire Hillary Clinton has problems too, Ed Garvey?
Yeah, I do. I think that the recent debates, I think she's just not doing as well. She seems to be losing her footing a bit.
You don't think she recovered in that last one, like many are saying?
I don't think so. Yeah. But listen, Joy, you know me well enough to know I'm practically always wrong. So, I mean, anybody listening, don't be taking any bets.
You still have hopes hung on John Edwards.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think he's he's intelligent, he's articulate, he's got the right values. And I think he may well fool some people. If he should finish first in Iowa or New Hampshire, then I think it's a real horse race.
Yeah. You have an assessment on that, Joe Ankelhoff?
I like John Edwards because of his nice hairstyle.
I'd like to elect his wife as well.
Boy, isn't that true?
Well, and on the Republican ticket, I did hear Mitt Romney taking a few swipes now at Mike Huckabee, who maybe hasn't been the focus of attention until now. He's moving up in the polls by saying things that people really aren't looking at Huckabee's record, and that he oversaw a big tax increase in Arkansas. Joe,
absolutely. These guys, I think it's great. This is the American way. These guys are doing our work for us. We've got to sort out the credibility. We've got to discount from whence it comes. But this is good stuff. One moderate Republican taking on another moderate Republican. Nothing better. Certainly, Huckabee's record as a governor is going to be provide fodder for conservative Republicans that don't see Huckabee as a qualified conservative flag carrier, and of course Romney's the same. But Romney is right politically, strategically, to point this stuff out. More power to him. Although somebody needs to come back with the same charges at Governor Romney.
Oh, I think they're doing that. I mean, the problem that Mitt Romney has, I think, is that number one, his comment that his five sons had something more important to do than to be in Iraq, and that's to get him elected president. But he's changed all of his positions on key issues. See, I respect people who believe in right to life. I mean, I disagree with them, but I respect it. But that's such a fundamental choice that you don't change that just overnight as you're thinking about running for office. And I think Romney is just, he took one position in liberal Massachusetts and another one now that he's trying to appeal to the conservative right wing of the Republican Party. And I don't think that flies very well.
Now, I know there's still a long way to go, and this isn't decided, as we've just been discussing, but I had someone ask me a question the other day, and I'd like to pose it to both of you. If we get the front runners at this time nationally for November, Rudy Giuliani and Hillary Clinton, his question to me was, what's the difference? They're both pro-choice. They're both pro-war. They're both anti-gun. I don't see the difference. Do you see a difference between those two candidates, Ed Garvey?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think if you look at Hillary Clinton, she's going to do whatever she can to have national health care to make sure that everyone is covered. I think she'd have a much better tax system and start to close the gap between the super rich and the rest of us. I think that she would be better on trade. She's not good on trade, but I think she'd be better certainly than Giuliani, who would be doing whatever the big business folks want. But I think, you and I aren't going to have much to say about it. I suspect that the right wing is going to put over $1 billion into the presidential race when it gets down to the finals. And you're going to see so many TV spots and so many flyers coming that it'll be hard to figure out who's who. But, I see a big difference.
Joe, do you see a difference between those two?
Oh, absolutely. And what I don't see a difference in is the money that they're going to bring to the race. And Ed talks about the big right-wing money. There was more left-wing and union money in the last presidential election, substantially more than there was right-wing money. And, of course, Ed's going to bring up his public finance issue again. But if we want to compare money, there's more money today in the left-weighted 527s. Absolutely, there's a difference.
If that were true, I'd run for office. Yeah, I guess it takes more than money.
We got to find
I've
the right
that.
527. Giuliani will bring a much more the maintenance of a free market here in the U.S. and hands off government. Hillary Clinton is scary as much as she brings more government involvement to our capital markets, and this scares Americans.
Do you think that if Kerik is not in prison, that President Giuliani would appoint him to Homeland Security?
Yeah, it might work. It might work. You know, when you talk about character, boy, what a couple characters would be on the ballot. And that's too bad that we're not talking about character.
Let me take a short pause and, again, welcome callers to join our discussion. It's our Friday Week in Review, the Thanksgiving week edition of the Friday Week in Review. We have with us Joe Egelhoff, editor of FoxPolitics.net, and Ed Garvey, attorney and editor and publisher of FightingBob.com. 1-800-642-1234, our number if you'd like to join in. And I think I'll bring up a big Second Amendment case that the U.S. Supreme Court has agreed to hear as our next topic. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up, Cheryl Gasser in for Kathleen Dunn. Coming up after 9 o'clock, do you want to go green for the holidays? Cheryl and her guest will discuss ideas for environmentally friendly decorating, shopping, traveling, and dining. Going green for the holidays coming up after 9 o'clock. We are reviewing the news of the week for the rest of this hour with Joe Egelhoff, who is editor of FoxPolitics.net, and Ed Garvey, who is editor and publisher of FightingBob.com. And what do we make of the U.S. Supreme Court agreeing to hear a case, the Washington, D.C. handgun ban, and perhaps next year deciding if this is constitutional or not? How big a deal is this, Ed Garvey?
I'm only comfortable when the court is not sitting. This is such a terrible court from the point of view of, from people with my perspective. It's not good news they're taking up this case, because I think you could predict that they'll do the wrong thing and say that we can't have those kinds of controls over handguns.
Yeah, what do you think, Joe?
I think it's a really complex case, and that the last case, well, the last, not the last case, but the case they decided with the issue of Bush's faith-based initiatives versus the freedom from religion, that was all, that was decided on the basis of who had standing. And this case, too, has a major element, is who has standing. And I think it's going to be a very complex result, and I hope that we in Wisconsin don't go crazy about it, trying to apply it to Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Constitution, and the Wisconsin rules about guns in homes.
Well, this is such a hot button issue. You know, if you're running for office in Wisconsin, no matter where you are, I would get asked about it, and I'd say, look, I'm going to work hard for 4 years so you can afford to buy again. But, I mean, the simple fact is that the National Rifle Association has been so good at blowing smoke that the real issue, if you ask the American people, should there be some control over handguns, for example, the Saturday night specials, I think something like 70% say yes. But members of Congress are afraid to go against the National Rifle Association, even on issues like cop killer bullets. I mean, so you get the police in favor of a position, you get the people in the country in favor, but the NRA is so powerful that the Congress hasn't been able to stand up to them. Now it's going to be up to the court, and if the court says that any restrictions are unconstitutional, we will be going crazy.
Yeah. What it'll come down to is whether the court thinks that this was considered a collective right to bear arms, as in militia, versus an individual's right to bear a handgun.
Yes, and I think that's been decided, hasn't it, Ed, previously, that this indeed, that the Second Amendment, because it's surrounded by the other amendments, is indeed an individual right?
You know, I don't know the answer to that question. I hate it when non-lawyers make me look foolish.
Again, this is so complex. It's not just the basic individual or collective. It's the three different statutes that the D.C. Code uses, even so far as they may have an impact on gun locks and whether you have to take your gun apart in your home.
Yeah, heaven forbid we have safe guns.
Yeah. Well, I'm with you, Ed.
In any case, it's likely to be an issue now in the presidential campaign, given that they're going to be hearing this case in February and probably issuing some sort of ruling maybe in June. So,
well, one issue they won't be dealing with is embryonic stem cells.
Yes. That was the next issue.
Yeah.
This is pretty exciting stuff that UW-Madison researchers have discovered a way to make stem cells without destroying embryos.
Right. I think it's, as one of the people said, it's like the Wright brothers in their first flight. James Thompson is such a credit to the state of Wisconsin. It was so nice to read the front page of the New York Times, and it's the University of Wisconsin that's taken this major step forward. I think this is just great news.
Yep. Joe?
I agree. I've got goosebumps as we talk about it. So exciting, and to talk about Dr. Thompson as, you know, what someone called it, the bookends. It's ironic that here's James Thompson on the front page of the New York Times, in that he was the man to begin embryonic stem cell research. Interesting article in the Times, I guess yesterday, that talking to Dr. Thompson, that he had ethical concerns about the research from the outset. Really interesting, and such an interesting press release that was done by Alta Charo on the bioethics. Such great stuff.
And I think we should tip our hats to Governor Doyle, who has been pushing very hard for this and sort of giving a protective layer so that the radicals on the right wouldn't stop this sort of research.
And let's tip our hats to those radicals that push.
I'm not wearing a hat.
Push for this kind of option and this brilliant research.
Yeah, we will. By the way, we're going to try to go after a guest to talk about this and the implications of this research, including seeing if Alta Charo will come on and talk more about this next week sometime here on this program. And those of you who are interested in the Second Amendment and gun rights will want to tune in this afternoon. Forgot to mention that John Munson in for Ben Marins will be talking with the director of the Wisconsin pro-gun movement, Jim Fendry, about this Supreme Court case and where the movement is today. And that's after 5 o'clock this afternoon.
You should also have Bowling for Columbine as required viewing prayer.
Now, why do you say that, Ed?
Since Michael Moore did such a nice job with the head of the NRA.
Yeah. Well, on a positive note, I want to comment on Dr. Is it Faust, a physician at the UW, commenting on Dr. Thompson. It is unusual in the history of science for a scientist to really want to think carefully about the ethical implications of his work. It just is everything about the work that's being done at UW and the wide base of support there. It's just, and if you want to include Governor Doyle, Ed, I won't go that far. But
<All right>. Well,
it's phenomenal, and we're fortunate to be in the midst of it.
Yeah,
you got that right.
We I have some callers who want to go back to the presidential campaign, and maybe we'll do that. But let me touch on a few more issues from this week. I talked to a guest earlier this week who said that there's, you know, far too much negativity in this country. We should think about things that are going right rather than everything that's going wrong. And one of the examples he brought up was that the war in Iraq, the surge in Iraq, is apparently militarily working, in his words, and that violence was down and that there was reason to be thankful that things were getting better in Iraq. Ed Garvey, you just rolled your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the explosions this morning, another 18 people killed. The fact is that if you have many more troops there, the chances are that you're going to reduce some violence. But this will be the record number of American soldiers die this year than any time since we started the invasion. What I think is most interesting is that the Democrats seem to have awakened, and we now have Congressman Murtha and Congressman Obie saying no more money for this war effort until the president sets a timetable for withdrawal. So that I think is a positive note.
Joe?
Yeah, talking about the Iraq war with Ed Garvey on the other end of the line, this is very dangerous, and I could go and I could talk about optimism in our country, which I could talk about forever.
I'm Irish. Of course I'm optimistic.
I'm thrilled to see, I guess I could say, as an American, interested to see the actions of Congressman Obie. Good for him. It's about time. Congress did what it has a right to do, although the Pentagon is putting up a fight, and good for them. They need to fund the troops. They need to fight the war without a deadline date to give to our enemy, which is what Bush is asking. Bush has heard the attitude of the country. He understands that and is beginning to pull out troops. Let's not give them a deadline date. I mean, that's what this is all about. So, and Obie is pushing the issue. Good for him. But let the Pentagon push back.
Well, I agree with half of what you said. So.
Let me bring up one more issue, a state issue, an email from John in Park Falls wanting both of you to comment on the overflow hearing that was held. Mm. It was actually on the 15th. In the Senate Education Committee at the state legislature, calling for a deadline of July 1st, 2009 to put in place a totally new and equitable means of funding our Wisconsin schools.
Mm-hmm.
John says that the current system is broken, needs to be fixed, it cannot be fixed, and needs to be replaced. That's John's opinion. What do you make of school funding and this push to change it, Joe?
I'm holding on to my pockets, every single one of them. Push to change means push to spend more. Now, if a push to change means let's find a way, we've worked to find ways, but let's find another way, more ways, to be equitable. If that's what this means, great. If we are truly trying to provide as much as possible equitable educations in the different areas of the state that have different levels of wealth, great. But what this really means is spend even more money on education. And I think that's not the best way to go about it. When we do this change, there are winners and losers. And the losers are going to need to be paid off. And it's going to cost us more money. And it's not right.
Well, we don't know what's going to happen, but we're going to have to spend more money if we're going to fulfill our obligation to the next generation. And it seems to me that it's tragic that our schools are not able to attract some of the best people because of the QEO. I think that it's wrong that we've got 8,300 homeless children without a program that really educates them. I think that we've got to get away from just property tax and talk about progressive income tax and eliminating some of the loopholes in our tax law to start paying for this. I don't think Joe ought to pay more. I think that the big corporations that are not paying their fair share are the ones who ought to be paying more.
So when the corporations pay more, Ed, and you have less economic activity in the state of Wisconsin, what's that going to do to your taxes and my taxes?
The right always says, oh, well, a business is going to leave if you spend a little bit more. I don't believe it. I mean, they come here and stay here because of the quality of our life in the state of Wisconsin, not just because they might get a slightly better deal in Minnesota or Illinois or Iowa. So I think that the problem is that now every tax bill that comes up is a loophole for somebody. And if we eliminated the loopholes, you wouldn't have to pay more in taxes.
Ed, I'd like to take you to task on the issue about quality teachers in our schools. We here in Appleton have a list of hundreds of applications on file, teachers waiting for a position, teachers that have applied for a position. We have ample supply of quality teachers in most areas. There are some technical areas that there are challenges. But in most areas, we have a very high supply because of the quality of life, because of the working conditions, and because of the wages and benefits. So let's not start up that path.
Yeah. You like Appleton.
I like Appleton. Appleton's my hometown, Ed.
Okay. I'll be quiet.
Now, just a couple of minutes to go here. Ed, you going to go shopping today?
No.
You avoid stores
the day after Thanksgiving? I mean, I'm going to sue the Cap Times because I hurt myself lifting the newspaper yesterday. I've never seen so many ads in my life. When I hear that people are out at 3 in the morning or 4 in the morning so they can get a good deal, it's scary. But I think even scarier is the state of the economy and whether this is going to impact what's going to happen in the next several months. If a consumer stops spending or slow down just by 5% or so, it could have a drastic effect on the economy. This is a very fragile moment, but my shopping wouldn't matter.
And we only have a minute to go, Joe.
Yeah, I'm going to shop because I need a wingback chair for my bedroom. That's the only reason. I'm with Ed. The economy is of key import here, and it looks as though Wisconsin is edging above the rest of the country. We're a little more positive. Housing prices are actually starting to inch up, so I'm feeling optimistic.
There we go. We'll end on an optimistic note, okay, Ed?
Okay.
All right. Joe Engelhoff, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Joe is editor of FoxPolitics.net, and Ed Garvey, thank you very much.
Thank you, Joy. Thanks, Joe.
And Ed is editor and publisher of FightingBob.com and Madison attorney. And thanks to Leo Duran for producing this hour, and thank you for listening and calling in. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come here on the Ideas Network, and I hope you will join us Monday at this time. I think I'm going to be talking with the two authors of the new book, The Dangerous Book for Girls. I talked with the authors of The Dangerous Book for Boys a while ago, this time The Girls, on Monday between 8 and 9. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.